I want people to think about who puts their food on their table and beverages in their glass and gas in their car, and go find them and find their employer and give them a better life.
Chris, how do you introduce yourself to people? Like when someone meets you, how do you introduce yourself? What do you usually say?
I usually just say I'm Chris. If a patient is talking about my degrees, I say I'm Dr. Chris, but I'm usually just Chris, Chris McCallum, Christine, if you're mad at me, of course. And that's about it.
It was James Richard when I knew I was in trouble. When the first went real, it was no longer Jimmy and it went middle name. That's when I knew I was in trouble.
Exactly. I think that's pretty standard.
And then when people ask what you do, how do you usually respond? What do you get to say?
So I tell them I'm a physical therapist and that I'm lucky enough to work at company locations. So I don't have a clinic that they can visit, but I work with employees.
And then who are the type of employees? Because this is different. I've met other people who do this, but I feel like people who do this always do it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of iterations. My type of clients that I've gravitated to are people that have a lot of manual labor. So, one of my clients is a major beverage manufacturer, including making all of the containers, for the beverages. I also have a food distribution, warehouse. So people pulling food off of, big pallets and building orders. And so a lot of physical work, a lot of fast work.
So there's a bunch of questions I want people to understand, because this is not, I don't think this is on the menu. And what I mean by that is I don't think people, there's not often just a job application for this sitting on Indeed. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you probably had to invent this. Like you sort of knocked on doors and said, hey, I'm Dr. Chris. I can do ABC. And here's why those things are should be valuable and important to you. Do I have that right?
You have that right, except I got lucky. I was about to quit PT.
Really?
And I interviewed for a job that was posted as physical therapist at corporate wellness location, Ergonomics a Plus. And I didn't have any of that, but I applied. They hired me, and it was a lot of yes and late night reading. And so I worked for a fitness company that also provided physical therapy to this company. To their client.
Got it. What type of company was it?
They provided health and wellness initiatives, as well as ran a gym.
Okay. But who is the client that you ultimately were working through this company for?
It is a beverage manufacturer.
I feel like you're on the end of like super interesting. You don't have to say the name of the beverages, but I feel like, are any of them alcoholic beverages?
Perhaps.
You're doing God's work, Chris.
I know.
You're making sure that those cans get filled and then the people who fill them do great. Yes. Okay, so there was an application for that, but I've spoken to several people who literally found themselves in similar roles and they did it by knocking on doors, right? And
yes.
And ultimately, that's how everything starts, right? It's one human saying to another human, hey, what are your problems? I have this problem. Oh, I have a friend or I can help you alleviate that problem.
Exactly.
Let's talk about how you do what you do.
Okay.
What is your day like? Because you said you don't have a clinic. You're working in their facility. You're going to where people are, right? Which is great. Yeah. What do you do? Is it preventative? Is it rehabilitative? Is it a mix of both, is my guess? What do you like? Walk me through this. Give me the brochure.
It can be all of those things. At the two main clinics I run, one has a ton of treatment. And so people who have discomfort can just come to us and say, you know, my arm has been bothering me and it seems related to work, but I didn't injure it. So we can do some PT treatment because we're a direct access state. There is no workers' comp claim in place. So we can just treat them per normal. There are other people that say, I sprained my ankle on the weekend playing with the kids. We treat them. And then my other location, I am out on the floor at the beginning of their shift, greeting people as they come in. We do a quick stretch. I just ask people, how are you feeling? Do you have any issues? And we may treat them, or a supervisor may say, he had some ankle pain yesterday. Can you please look at him, make sure he's good to work, provide OSHA first aid, or I might do an ergonomic assessment. But my, I guess, skill set is really a little more personal based and drawing people into healthcare.
Yeah. So you're literally there in the morning when they're walking in.
Yes.
Yeah. This feels very much like, this feels like what I've learned about like Asian culture, like Japanese car manufacturers. If you've ever seen a video, like they start the day off with movement, like as a, an organization, it is built into the day.
Yes. Exactly.
Reasons, and they explain reasons for that. Number one's like camaraderie and, you know, psychological reasons. And then all the health benefits to that, because they realize that their workforce is their, is actually their strongest and most valuable asset. So you being on site, gosh, there's, I mean, you can minimize time off. You can prevent some things that might actually knock somebody out for a couple of days or weeks or months. That's got to be great.
It's awesome. It is. It's just so rewarding for me. And I've really made a difference in people's lives, whether it be with physical therapy or some other issue that they had that I was able to direct them or tell them, oh, the reason your leg's been hurting for 8 months is you have varicose veins. Try a compression sock, go see a physician. And a week later, they're fine. And they've suffered for 8 months or 6 months or whatever.
Unnecessarily.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So do you work for one organization now, or do you work for a couple? How's that like structured? How's your specific practice structured?
Yeah. So my practice, it's right now, it's just me and another person. I have had up to four PTs. But COVID kind of shut one of the, or three PTs, one of the clients shut down completely with COVID. So so I have two main clients, and then one client I see once a month for half a day. And I either go to Clinic A, which is a small room with a massage table and some stretching bands, or Clinic B, which is attached to a big fitness center. We can use the fitness center and the medical center. They have a medical center on site attached. So just depends on which day of the week it is.
Yeah. That's got to make you pretty inventive. Number one, you've got to, that's what we like to say as PTs. Well, we'll figure it out. But I like the fact that you don't have to ask somebody to describe what their workstation looks like. You can walk to it with them.
Yes, for sure. And if someone comes to me and I've not seen them working, or I haven't seen what their station looks like, I go look at it, make an appointment to go do that. We've done hundreds of job profiles, which is a quick screen, like how much do they have to lift? Do they have repetitive motion? And a quick job description. So it's not a legal document per se, but it gives us a quick idea, or gives the medical center a quick idea, you know, because a lot of times people will say to their orthopedist, yeah, I can go back to work. And they show up on the production floor on crutches with a boot on, you know, and that doesn't fly.
No. Oh, your job requires you to take steps while holding something, but you're using two crutches right now because of an ankle injury. That's just not possible. But you're there. So ballpark it for me. How many people are at the organizations that you're at? Like, you know, in terms of company size, roughly.
Locally 1,500, nationally 4,000. I just work locally, but we network together with different PTs in different states. So we're all doing the same thing. And then the other one is probably 400 people on site at a time. And again, nationally, and we just organize our systems. So we're all providing kind of the same services.
So, I mean, if you combine those things, like you and the people that work with you are sort of close to 2,000 people. Not all of them are under your care at one time, but you're sort of there for them as a resource for up to 2,000 people.
Yes.
Think about how great this is for the profession, because you're quite literally a face, and people, you know, we always say, well, we need people to understand what PT does. And I think, yes, how are you communicating that? Chris standing at the front door every morning and say, how you doing? I got to be honest with you. That's better than a Super Bowl commercial.
It's a lot cheaper.
Hey, where are you going with your PT career? That's not rhetorical. I want to know. Would you like to embark on an extraordinary patient care adventure? That's what they call it. Some people might call it travel therapy. Find out more at jacksontherapy.com. This is perfect for physical therapists who are eager to make their mark. Discover where your skills can take you at JacksonTherapy.com with Jackson Therapy Partners. And here's a question for you. You frustrated with your EMR? Feel like it should do more, be easier? Yeah. Take the next step. Maybe try something new. How about an EMR that's all in one? Seamless integrations of patient portals, marketing automations, and billing, all at an unbeatable value. Plus, switching over is a breeze. See what you can do with MW Therapy and their all-in-one EMR at MWTherapy.com. And how would you like to boost your bottom line and help more people? You can do both of those things without having to work more. Smarter, not harder, kids. Boost your clinic's revenue by $290 per patient per quarter by adding remote therapeutic monitoring. You've heard about it, but you're like, I don't know where to get started. Is it complicated? Well, what if you knew where to get started and it wasn't complicated? That's what Physiotech is here for. Kickstart your RTM at physiotech.ca. That's physiotech.ca right now with Physiotech. Okay, so let's talk about money now.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
And we don't have to get into specifics as much as you want, but why should an organization, you know, and I'm using air quotes here, because 400 people is not a small company. 400 is a lot.
Right.
Especially one of the brand, like who you see. And then 1500 is a lot more, but why is the juice worth the squeeze of having Chris on site? Like what, like how do you pitch that? Or, you know, obviously you don't have to pitch it because the people you work with understand it, but help someone else understand like, oh, this would be kind of cool to work embedded in an organization. How does the math make sense? How do the dollars make sense of what, because you have to be providing more value than you're getting, right?
Right.
Than you're receiving in terms of money. So walk me through that.
So the biggest selling point is really, to be honest, the employee experience. Hiring and retaining employees is so difficult. And for them, one, to know that they're cared for, and two, to access their health and wellness benefits better. If it's a one-to-one and we have improved the employee experience and their retention goes up, it's a win. But if we use a cost calculator, I can use clients' data, but just in general, the OSHA cost calculator is going to tell you that a strain or sprain that requires medical care and has lost time associated with it and physical therapy care, it's going to be $30,000 in direct costs. Now, the employer may not pay all that. They may go through workers' comp or something, some other method, but the indirect cost for anything over $10,000 is equal to that. So that's $60,000 of lost time, coverage, decreased productivity, medical care, insurance changes, and all the other things that go along with that. And, you know, it's going to be hundreds of hours for me to cost $60,000, right? So we can see them earlier. We can maybe prevent them from going to medical at all. But if they go to medical, they get there with a really good diagnosis from a PT. They can get their care on site so they can have still be doing some kind of job, even if it's altered duty.
So, I mean, I'm roughly doing the math, but if you want to make $150,000, you essentially need to say, show, if I prevent this five times in a year, you've broken even. Like, you've broken even. If it's 30 grand, and you know, we're generalizing here, but you're like, you can see in a workforce of 400 or 1500 people, you got to do that five times in 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, it's not a hard sell, really, when you think of it mathematically.
When you get in front of the right person.
Yes, yes. And so it could be the safety team. It could be the operations team. It could be HR. I've worked with all of those, and sometimes those are fairly intertwined.
Right. But when you start talking, and this is where my communications brain kicks in, right? When you start talking to people in their language about what they value, all you have to do is just give them, you start giving them a little breadcrumbs like, hey, like, what are your biggest, this is where I sound like the smartest guy in the room. This is my secret. I just ask questions. I never answer them. But you'll say like, hey, what are your biggest cost expenditures in terms of injuries or whatever. Like, oh, sprains and strains. And you're like, oh, did you know that each one? I'm sure you know because you're the math person here. You're the safety person. You're the HR person. It's 30 grand. What if I could prevent 5 of those every year? You're like, well, yeah, you pay for yourself and then some, which I'm guessing you're preventing or helping 5 of those in the first week or month at minimum.
Well, hopefully not that many, right?
Well,
hopefully we're out there minimizing that. But yeah, I mean, I have from last year, I had a 1/4. And if we look at treatment avoided, cost avoided, and then as well as injury avoided and the circle we just went through, it was over $300,000.
So you've done that. You do this math. You do this math regularly, or the team. Do you do this, or does the company do this? And you're viewing.
I do it, and then usually, actually, what I do if I don't have access to their claims data, because they would know what an average strain costs, and it might be different than the OSHA cost calculator. I just take 10% of the OSHA cost calculator, and right. just say, this is a very conservative model, and I've still saved you a ton more money than you've paid me.
You're using objective, real, their real objective data and saying, so let's look.
Yes.
So if you do this ballpark, like what do you think, what would you think having a PT at a physical demanding facility like beverage canning, whatever, and food processing, what does having a PT save a company? Could you even ballpark that?
I don't know. I would just say cost to benefit ratio guaranteed of 1 to 3.
Wow. So for every dollar spent, you're saving 3.
Yeah.
And that's the smartest way to do it. Don't get in the weeds. I mean, I can get in the weeds with numbers if you tell them. But you're like essentially a 3-to-1 ratio. For every dollar you spend, I'm going to save you 3. And anybody who runs a business is going to take that bet every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, now, I'm not very familiar with OSHA. In fact, the only time I've ever been interacted with OSHA, I was a senior in high school. This is a weird, funny story. I was the class treasurer and my buddy was the class vice president in high school. And we were setting up for the prom or a Christmas something. And in the school newsletter, they put a picture of me standing next to a ladder and my buddy Danny standing on a ladder, but like one rung above where he should be standing. We are 17 years old.
Uh-huh.
We get called into the office and our senior class advisor is like giggling, but like, we have to have a meeting. And we're like, oh, okay, what did we do? And they're like, they're laughing. And like, we got a letter from OSHA about you. And we were like,
oh my gosh,
we're like, we're 17. Like, what's OSHA? And it was just probably because the newsletter got mailed out to the community.
Oh yeah.
Where Danny and I were on a he's on a ladder hanging up a decoration. And they're like, you did a thing. You're not supposed to that little, and there's this organization out there. Like, you're not in trouble. We just wanted to, and I was like, wow, what's a OSHA? So that was my first and only like slap on the wrist from OSHA. But if you look at it, the school was advertising that there were students acting unsafely on the front page of his newsletter that went out to 30,000 people. And OSHA obviously wasn't trying to get 17 years old in trouble, but they were like, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And as a school district, you have an insurance policy. So if that's going on and you're advertising it, you shouldn't be doing it. So,
yeah.
Right. But my point of bringing this stupid anecdote is to make fun of my friend Danny and also highlight that OSHA has a ton of data and translates those things into dollars that you as a physical therapist can use for
exactly.
yourself. I mean, that's exactly. got to be great.
Yeah. So depending on the state, actually Colorado, it's a little harder to find the data because some of it they don't post. But OSHA does they don't get every business, but they will show you what how many recordables they had, how many lost days, how many restricted right. days. And that's all data that you can use. I'm not sure. I haven't looked for specific, like strain sprain versus broken leg versus that kind of thing. But it's super helpful. And again, if you can, decrease it by 5%, that's huge. Any OSHA recordable event is bad for the company. It's bad for the business. Increases their costs. And for some of these companies, something we haven't talked about is a lot of companies in this size are self-funded for their insurance. And so what that means in a nutshell is they pay for any claim. And so, and it usually if they're self-funded for their health insurance, they also are for their workers' comp. And there's lots of caveats to this, but if someone goes out to a PT clinic and racks up a $200 bill, which I'm pretty sure is very reasonable, then that is unrealized cost. And I'm not making $200 an hour there. I'm not greedy. I'm just making more than I would as a staff PT somewhere. And so that is another way that you can save them money.
Yeah, if you're self-funded, correct me if I'm wrong, because here's how you are essentially saying you're more invested because the more you see the savings more accurately. Instead of just paying, instead of being insured by a large corporation and paying a premium every month, you're saying we are going to take more control of this and we think we can do it cheaper by doing it ourselves. And then, but as soon as you do, you better have some measures in there to reduce things that a physical therapist can help, have somebody on a safety team on staff to prevent major accidents, right? Because now you're more on the hook. You have more skill in the game. So you're probably more apt to be more proactive on the low hanging fruit. Like, what can I prevent? What can I avoid? What can I mitigate? Do I have that right?
Exactly. Yeah. So self-funded, they take the premiums and they put them in a trust and then they pay the claims, whether it be workers' comp or private. And so I had a big thought that came through. Don't know where it went. Oh, have you heard of Matt Ort, O-H-R-T?
No.
He is kind of on the front edge of getting self-funded companies to use their self-funding to their benefit. He has a book called Don't Feed the Beast. And essentially, when you're self-funded, you have access to data, which you don't have if you just have an insurance company. So you can look at what your services your employees are using, aren't using, and you can create your own a la carte sort of carrier program, which you don't get that if the insurance company is paying the claims. They just offer you plan A, B, and C, and you may be missing something or you may have some stuff that you don't use.
So it's not money, but you're also, you're not, you don't have access to your own data. And we now, I think in 2024, we understand how valuable having access to data is, because otherwise you're just trusting companies that are, that you're paying.
Exactly. And that's a lot of misplaced trust in my mind.
I mean, I can I trust people as far as I can throw them, right? And I can't throw an insurance company very far. Just can't, or I'll hurt myself and then I'll have to make a claim.
Yes, exactly.
If someone was hearing this, because I remember when I became a physical therapist not long ago, I remember hearing about people who did stuff like you and being like, oh, that's cool, but that's probably super rare. Am I right? Or is it, was it super rare and now it's not as rare? Or like, how common is this?
In the scheme of things, if we take all outpatient
care
and then we take on-site services, not just care, but services, it's probably a very small percentage. But there's a big push right now through the private practice section. They have a direct to employer services education curriculum that they just put up. So how to do the business side of things. Also, the occupational health special interest group just came out this year with the occupational health, or last year, occupational health practitioner certification. And that's like all the things you need to know to work properly on site. And if I can do a little plug here, I brought my book,
The On-Site Physical Therapist.
And so the reason that I wrote this book is during the pandemic, I realized how inequitable healthcare is for employees that work in these on-site manual therapy positions. The production line doesn't stop when they leave. They lose pay if they leave to go to an appointment. The employer has to approve it or hire somebody else to put in there. And so people just are not getting their care. And, you know, this people were just sleeping at work and going back to work during the pandemic, essential workers. And they just were not using their health care. And so, you know, I just felt so passionate about these people that were putting food on your table. And so for me, every time I would meet a PT, like at CSM last year, I met people and they're like, oh, I didn't know that you could do that. I didn't know that was a thing to work on site. And as my dad said, so you're going to write a book and teach people how to do what you do, and they're going to take all your business. And all I said was, yes, because I believe there's enough business for all of us. Yeah, and I believe that, you know, there's certainly going to be people that need to go to clinics, but why do we need to use this middleman insurance, make it such a big deal when they can just come to us and we can help them? We can prevent them from going to the emergency department with a strain.
Right. You writing that book, I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. Like what we're competing with. It's that scene, I mention this all the time, it's the scene from that movie, A Beautiful Mind. Like, if we all compete, we all actually lose. But if we coordinate, like, and that's what I tell people all the time, like even if you're a local PT and there's five other PTs in your small little town, the other PTs aren't as much as your competition as you think. In fact, if you work together, and I'm not saying join practices, I'm not saying formally, you writing the book, empowering other people, but you know the math that, you know, and I don't know where the heck I got statistic from, but 7% of people who could use or could benefit from PT actually access it. Seven, which I'm not a mathematician, but 93% out there. So we're arguing over seven when we can collaborate over 93. I'll take that. I'll take part of the 93 instead of some of the scraps of seven.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Who should read your book and what are they going to learn when they get?
Well, physical therapists should read my book. They're going to learn what my process was like, how I started, how you can enter. It doesn't have to be knocking on doors right away. You can join a fitness company. You can leverage a methodology company that teaches industrial on-site services. You can leverage a medical center or go in with a physician to provide two sets of services on-site. So physical therapists for sure. If you don't have any industrial skills, then you'll probably need a little more training. But if you've done some industrial skills, this is what you need.
What are industrial skills? What are those?
Functional job evaluation, pre-employment, post-employment testing, ergonomics.
So these are the things that you meant, and correct me if I'm wrong, these are the things that in the Academy of Orthopedic PT, the occupational health SIG certification, those are the types of things they'll teach you in that.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Rick Wickstrom was sort of the guy who led that charge, right? You were.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was
the peer committee for them. So.
Yeah, I got to work with Rick and like, how do we promote this? And the funny part is a lot of the reviews that came in were, I didn't know this was a thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like you know, someone saying to you, you're going to write this book and everyone's going to steal your business. You're like, do you know how many people have no idea? None. And then, you know, for every 100 people that read the book, 5 are going to take action. Like you want it to be more, but you know how humans are.
Yes, I know how humans are.
Like, I got a pile of books that I'm going to read and become a better person. And I'm going to do 4% of the things that I read. I want to do all of them, but we're humans. You're writing this because number one, you've been doing this. You've been a PT for more than 20 years. Right?
Yes, exactly.
And you're saying people deserve this.
Oh my gosh.
The people that you treat. I mean, yeah.
Yes. People deserve this. All right. So I would like occupational health to stop being about workers' compensation injuries and to be about total worker health. Because when you say OC health, people are like, oh, the case manager and the doctor and they're malingering and all of these things. And it needs to be about employees and their health in general. And then it makes a ton of more sense to people.
Ballpark it for me. And you can say you don't know because I'm asking you a lot of data questions. You're like, I don't know, man. How many PTs are doing this? And then what would you consider success in 10 years if this blew up? Like how much, what I'm asking is how much room do you think there is for growth? Like if you said there, if we maxed out, if everybody read your book and then every position that could be filled was, how much room for growth is this?
99%.
That much. Yeah. I was going to guess a lot. I was going to say 80%, but you're thinking we are at 1% of max capacity by doing this.
I think in terms of employers and their employees having access. I mean, we know that Toyota and Chevron are awesome at this, right? We've heard a lot of studies that come from them. I mean, if you if we go back a couple decades, look at the military. The military did this out of, sorry, I got something coming on here. Get off of there. More technology problems. The military started because they didn't have enough orthopedists. So in the 70s, they gave PTs permission to do things. And now PTs are embedded everywhere.
Right.
So let's follow the military in that regard.
Well, that's usually how innovation goes. Like a lot of, because the military has need, usually acute need at scale, and money. And necessity is the mother of invention. But you know what else is? Necessity plus money. Like, and they also track things. Like, as much as we want to knock the government, they track stuff.
Yeah, so you're exactly. Able to
say, like, hey, for every dollar we spend, we get three. It's like, well, I like that math. That math maths. And then you start to see it trickle down. It goes from the federal government with the military. And then I started to see this back in 2016, 2017. And I know it was happening before this, but I just started to hear about it then, which was like state or city governments in the fire department, police department, EMTs, where they're like, hey, a fireman being out for 3 months, it sucks. Oh, yeah. You know why that sucks? Because it costs us money. So you got to push on the soft spots. You know, yes, it sucks for this guy, but that typically doesn't move the needle. Oh, it's for our bottom line. Oh, now we have need plus money or lack thereof. That's when things start to move.
Exactly.
And then you go to businesses and they are very acutely aware.
You know, one thing that I think people don't realize is if someone is injured at work, they're going to lose almost $4,000 over the next subsequent 2 to 3 years because of their time off. The person that got injured.
Wow,
because most people, when you're on workers' comp, you're usually not getting 100% of your pay. And a lot of people, and that's a 40-hour payment. And most people work in these jobs work more than 40 hours. So they may take a 50 or 60% hit in their what they're bringing home.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
My big injury in radio is like if I had like a little bit of a sore throat.
Yeah, and then you lose 45 minutes with me.
All right, so now I want to get into specifics. What are some of the common, you mentioned sprains and strains. What are some of like, what's your top 10 list of like things you see regularly?
Yeah, so shoulder movement dysfunction.
Back.
And, you know, we've done a really good job with back at my larger facility. You know, they put in some roller tables and lifting things, robots that lift. At the other facility, it's super young people and their backs are more pliable. So we do get some backs, but usually it's their glutes aren't working. Again, all this sounds familiar to you, I know. Lots of forearm stuff. You know, people always say, I have carpal tunnel. That's not really a big thing with what we see, but it is the tension and the overuse and the core not helping. And so we do a couple releases in 6 minutes, teach them one thing to do. They feel better. So then they come back next week and we do a little more, but you gotta be quick. You can't be like, oh, let's see. You gotta be good with your diagnoses and know when someone is trying to snow yonder. Cause you know, 1 out of 100 are going to do that to try and get off work.
Sure. This has got to be just terribly gratifying. Like you're really, I mean, because people who work these types of jobs, they don't want, typically, like you said, 1 out of 100, 99 out of 100 want to be able to keep working. And you you help a big part of allowing that.
Yes, for sure. It's awesome. I just love it. People are so thankful for any type of care they can get. To know that it's not serious, to know where to go, to feel better, even if it's short-lived for the first couple of sessions. But, you know, in general, I'm in a position where 2 or 3 sessions and they're 80 or 90% better when you get them early, right? And if they're not, then you refer and you go through all the right channels. But there's so many people in that boat. And I will tell you that we have people that have had therapy elsewhere and then I come on site and start doing it there and they say, well, they never did any of this with me. And it's not because of the therapist, which I always emphasize, it's because of the system that therapists are working in outside they have so many bureaucracies and so many things that they have to meet. You know, they have to see three patients an hour.
Yeah.
That just sucks the big banana, to be honest.
Probably the first time I've ever had that phrase on the show. More than 1,200 episodes, sucks the big banana. I do like it. I'm going to use that. I'm going to incorporate that. Chris, we do a segment on the show called Three Questions. Are you ready for three questions?
Okay.
Let's do it.
On the hot seat with three questions on the PT Pinecast.
All right, three questions brought to you by our friends at ATI, giving you the tools and the opportunity to do what you love. Help people. Find them online at atipt.com and let's see where you're working. Three questions. First question. If there was a song about any aspect of your professional journey, what would it be titled and why? If there was a song that could describe what you get to do, I have a couple in mind. What do you think?
Oh my goodness. So many options.
Yeah.
I think that, it would probably be Dancing Queen.
Okay. Why?
Because of the joy of that song. And like, there have been times when I've helped somebody or left my day and I'm like, yes. And it feels great.
I was going to go with 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. All right. But see, that's why it's a question for you. I just write the questions. I don't answer them. What's a moment that takes you back into your career that sort of highlights the wins that you're able to provide? You know, you don't have to say the name of the person, but like, is there a story from a person that you're like, hey, this really mattered. Like, this was a postcard moment for me.
Yes. So we had somebody who, he was having some rib pain and he was going to Hawaii the next day for vacation and it hurt him to breathe. And so we started talking and I knew him from seeing him on the gym floor. And he's like, yeah, I have been having this, like when I hike, like I can't stop, walking when I'm downhill, like he described like a festinating gait. And he had a small concussion with a helmet about 4 months ago, skiing, got cleared by the physician. And I started doing some tests. We called the physician. He got an MRI that night. He had a bilateral subdural hematoma, and he was in surgery that night. So, you know, saving his life, I don't know, but that's what having the time with people gets you.
If there's ever an example for meeting people where they are, unfortunately, right? We are at work more than we are other places. So meeting someone, that's a great answer. And let me ask you this. You do love music, right? That's what sort of led with the music question. You have love for music. Besides music, if you could master any other art form, what would it be and why?
Probably mountain biking without crashing.
I like how you added that last. That's a very, you know, occupational health answer is mountain biking without crashing. It's very smart.
I think that hopefully that comes with doing it 2 decades later. I used to crash all the time, so I stopped, became a road cyclist. That's just silly now. I mean, there's too much traffic. So now hopefully I can do it with, you know, all four limbs intact, brain working well.
Yeah. All right, you're off the hot seat. That is three questions from our friends at ATI Physical Therapy. Last thing we do on the show, Chris, is called the parting shot.
This is the parting shot.
You mentioned the occupational health SIG, the parting shot, brought to you by the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy with 7 special interest groups, one of them being occupational health. So there's a value there and resources for the resource just put out last year from Rick Wickstrom and yourself. ATI also has this resource called Current Concepts of Orthopedic PT. Take you from wherever you are in your orthopedic journey and help you maybe feel confident, competent in that OCS exam if you want to do that. So parting shot, Chris, just your last chance for a mic drop moment, soapbox moment. What do you want to leave the audience with, an idea or a concept? What do you got?
I want people to think about who puts their food on their table and beverages in their glass and gas in their car and go find them and find their employer and give them a better life.
Yeah. And do it in their language, which, I mean, for better or worse, cost savings is a good thing for everybody. It also reduces costs of things that we buy and use.
Yes,
it absolutely makes a person's life better. I mean, who doesn't want to do that? And we say these things about PT. Buy Chris's book. Do you explain to people if, like, you could go after you read your book, could the reader then go to a company who's never done this before and at least know what to say when they knock on the door? Is there that content in there? Well, yeah. See, that's I bet you that's the barrier. Is people are just a little self. I don't know how to start. I'm just going to walk up to this big building and knock on the door. Who do I even ask for? That's probably, hey, I would love to have a meeting with your thinking team. And here's why. I would love to show you how to save X number of dollars next year. Would you be open for 15 minutes? If that person's good at their job and you say, I can save you this much money in the next 365 days, are you available for 15 minutes? If they're good at their job, they have to say yes.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Christy, we're going to put the link for your book in the show note and we'll link it out. But thanks for doing this. Thanks for taking the cover off of it. Because if one person goes and does this, think how many lives they can impact. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. And I want all PTs to feel as excited about their work day as me and leave the work at work and just feel great in helping people.
Love that. Dr. Chris, they say the best conversations that happen at happy hour. Thanks for coming to ours.
Thank you.